This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Nelson Mandela was an inspiration for reformers and revolutionaries throughout the 20th century. He galvanized a mighty force of freedom fighters to break the back of the apartheid system. But the transition from the apartheid system in South Africa left intact the capitalist economic system and the continued exploitation and poverty of South Africa's majority black population. On October 16, 2012, the South African police massacred 34 striking miners at the Marikana mine owned by the London-based Longman Company. A democratic South Africa was meant to bring to an end such barbarity, and yet the president and his ministers locked into a culture of cover-up.
Mazibuko Jara discusses the political situation in South Africa in the aftermath of the Longmen Marikana mine worker massacre and its broader context, including internal ANC battles and what it means for working class struggles and efforts to build the left. Mazibuko Jara is editor of Amandla.
Amandla is South Africa's new progressive magazine. Amandla, standing for social change, social justice, is a leader of the Democratic Left Front in South Africa, bringing together 40 South African social movements into a broad anti-capitalist front, and former media officer of the South African Communist Party and first chairperson of the Treatment Action Campaign, challenging Big Pharma and an AIDS denialist government to win ARV treatment.
And now we listen to Mazibuko Jara.
The events on the 16th of August at the platinum mine in Rustenburg speak to how the mainstream left in South Africa has come to an end of what it represented as an emancipatory project. What could have led to this? What does it mean for post-apartheid democracy in South Africa? For how the working class in South Africa sees, understands, and relates to the ANC, but also then the South African Communist Party, as well as the Congress of South African Trade Union, and what does it mean for going forward in response to the impact of neoliberalism in South Africa. Fundamentally, the South African political economy is still a mining economy. When the development of capitalism in South Africa started, it was on the basis of a mining revolution, and that mining revolution relied on the sustained provision of mass numbers of cheap black labor. That has been the pattern of what basically has been massive profits by primarily gold and diamond mines from the 1860s to now. The new change that we saw was the discovery of newer minerals, platinum, nickel, chrome, and a few others. Then, with the decline in gold and diamond reserves, there was a new wave of accumulation on the basis of platinum, as well as the new other minerals. And the 1994 democratic breakthrough, when Mandela got into power, did not change the fundamental character of the South African economy. That ensured that there was both cheap black labor, but also cheap energy. The major change is the move away from gold and diamonds to other minerals. But secondly, South African mining capital has been globalized. It's no longer mining capital that just has mines in South Africa, but it's extended to South America, to Ghana, to Australia, even to China. It has become globalized capital. A third major change in the mining sector has been the incorporation of a few politically connected black players who, under what is called black economic empowerment, then have been given equity shares in a whole range of enterprises. In the specific case of that particular mine in Marikana, the Longmen mine, one of the key people is Cyril Ramaphosa, the founding of the National Union of Mine Workers, which was formed in 1982. At that time, he was a young lawyer. When he was then elevated politically to become the Secretary General of the African National Congress, he then moved into business. So now, in the mining sector, then he was sought after because he was seen with his 10-year record in the Mining Workers Union and also his significant role in the transition. He was then seen as the kind of face who could be shown around by big white mining capital as the example of change. He has done very well for himself. He still remains the most popular leader in the ANC after perhaps the top two or the top three. His name has come up as a potential presidential candidate still. In the case of the Lone Mine mine, he's a member of the board of directors. He's a shareholder. Also, he has a company that sources labor to the Lone Mine company. The workers are demanding 12,500 rands a month, $1,560. Basically speaks to what has happened with regards to an ANC government that got into power but has not taken the challenge to owners of capital in South Africa. Instead, it has been incorporated through people like Cyril Ramaphosa, but also in terms of overall policy. It has continued to serve the big interests of mining capital. What has been frustrating for me in terms of how the media has covered the Lone Mine massacre is how the conditions of mine workers and mining communities have not been covered. One of the interesting press statements is a press statement from 2006, which was from a community which had 47 of its leading committee activists arrested for resisting rigging and drilling activities, which Lone Mine was starting in one province called the Limpopo province. So this was seen as an isolated case. In that particular case, again, there were ANC hands. Local provincial ministers in that province were beginning to be pulled in by Lone Mine as shareholders or as people through which the mine could negotiate with the communities. So this massacre speaks to the lack of transformation and to the incorporation of the ANC to serve the interests of mining capital, which has become increasingly globalized. This is in the context of an ANC that got into power on the basis of a popular mandate. That mandate promised two things: reconstruction and development. However, even that modest reconstruction and development goal was immediately trumped in 1996 by the imposition, rather the self-imposition, of a neoliberal program to show the right signals, to show that we're ready for investment, and so on. Even at the height of the crisis around this massacre, the ANC has continued with that message. South Africa continues to be a safe investment. And as such, then the response has been to demonize the backward, superstitious believing, arms wielding mine workers from Pondoland in the Eastern Cape. Very, very few voices have come through from the ANC to actually understand the exploitative conditions faced by communities, faced by mining workers. Under the ANC, we're not likely to see a major departure from this path. There has been a range of other currents, of other perspectives, within particularly COSATU, the trade union movement, and the Communist Party, and to an extent in the ANC Youth League. You may have heard of a massive debate over the last 2 years that was raised by the ANC Youth League, which specifically targeted the mining industry, where the Youth League called for the nationalization of mines under the rubric that mining capital has benefited over a period of 100 years and communities and workers have not. And if you nationalize, then there should be opportunities for the benefit of a large number of people. That forced the ANC to debate the role of the state in the mining sector. That led to a fairly famous report that the ANC debated in June. What that report does is to manage a set of contradictions. That document says that the state may play a role in strategic investment in strategic mineral resources. It will not go for a wholesale nationalization, but it may consider setting up a state mining company, or it could also consider other strategic roles for the state, whether it's through beneficiation or through a whole range of other requirements imposed on the mining sector. But nothing going as far as what the ANC Youth League had argued for. What is interesting about the debate on nationalization of mines in South Africa is that the Communist Party did not support that call, which is very strange. COSATU, the trade union movement, supported the Youth League, but for a range of complicated political reasons, it could not stand on the same platforms and campaign together with the Youth League, because the Youth League was using the nationalization debate as a proxy to challenge Jacob Zuma. COSATU is still in full support of Jacob Zuma, remaining president of the ANC. So what was a popular push from below for the nationalization of mines did not gain sufficient traction so that it could actually be pulled together a broad popular movement that would then push the ANC to a much more progressive policy when it comes to mines. The possible candidate to contest Jacob Zuma, also like Cyril Ramaphosa, is a former Secretary General of the National Union of Mine Workers. And in this instance, like Jacob Zuma, are both former members of the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party. Now, both Khalima Motlanthe and Jacob Zuma have not really come out in taking different positions on the question of the Marikana massacre itself, but also mining policy in general. So therefore, no matter what the ANC Youth League debates have been on nationalization, in terms of policy content, there's actually policy continuity between what Jacob Zuma and Khalima Motlanthe represent, even with what Thabo Mbeki, the former president, represented. However, the issue about the contestation with regards to ANC presidency has to do with who controls the machinery of the state and who then will dish out the tenders or will determine policy in which ways benefit which particular groupings of the aspirant black capitalists. I cannot read that ANC contestation in any better way as if it will represent a major shift in terms of policy. COSATU believes that with the removal of Thabo Mbeki in 2007, there was an opening for the left in the ANC. Jacob Zuma represented that opening in the view of COSATU. However, to its frustration, COSATU realizes that it doesn't matter who is at the head of the ANC. The ANC has not been pushed sufficiently by popular struggles or by the left in its alliance to actually shift gear significantly in terms of policy perspective. So this is where COSATU remains stuck. Very interestingly, the SACP is convinced there is no better left alternative in South African politics other than through a Jacob Zuma-led ANC. A Jacob Zuma-led ANC that has sustained the neoliberal program that Thabo Mbeki imposed in 1996. A Jacob Zuma ANC that has even done more than Thabo Mbeki in terms of attacking basic democratic credentials. I'll give you three examples. The killing of those workers at Marikana was just the pinnacle of what is basically low-intensity repression that has been existing for quite a while in South Africa. Last year, some of you may have heard of the killing of a protester in a small town called Fixburg, under Statane, killed by the police in front of the police cameras simply for protesting against poor service delivery. We have received hundreds of reports of activists who get tortured in police cells when they go out in community protests. Some of you may have also have heard of what is called in South African media the Secrecy Bill, the Protection of State Information Bill, which basically will make it difficult to access information held by the state on citizens. There's another bill called the General Intelligence Amendment Bill, which wants to increase the role and powers of the state in monitoring what citizens do. The fourth example of this increasing authoritarian repression is the ANC has introduced what is called a Traditional Courts Bill, which seeks to reimpose colonial and apartheid-inspired conservative powers to a traditional elite chiefs, who would then have the powers over a vast number of rural people. 59% of whom are women. These powers would mean that no one can opt out so long as you stay in that rural area. You cannot say your case must not be heard by this traditional court. It must be heard by a magistrate's court or some other forum. And it has a whole range of other drastic and anti-democratic measures. The repression, the secrecy bill, the intelligence amendment bill, the traditional courts bill, and an ANC that's shifting from basic democratic credentials promised by the Constitution. They speak to an ANC that, given the failure of its neoliberal program to undo underdevelopment, to remove apartheid special geography, to redistribute wealth, is then becoming increasingly intolerant of critique of dissent. I think there's still a lot of room for democratic contestation. But for me, we've got significant markers. So the Lon Min massacre, for me, has to be seen in that context where there's an increase there's an increasing tendency towards repression. Even if progressive movements have been demobilized over the last while in South Africa, but South Africa remains primarily an angry, politicized society. That's a fact. even if the ANC is still going to get a majority in the next two or three elections, but there's no security that the people on the ground will give ANC leaders an easy ride. The majority of the 34 workers who were killed on the 16th of August come from a particular region called Pondoland. This region is in the former Transkei. It's bigger than Swaziland. Swaziland is a country. It's bigger than Swaziland geographically in terms of the population and in terms of the economy. So that region held its ANC regional conference a week after the massacre. Those who support Jacob Zuma lost. That's an expression of how ordinary people in South Africa still exercise their political power in all sorts of ways, in the ANC, outside the ANC. So this makes for a lot of uncomfortability on the part of the ruling elite. It cannot ever rest, even if it may still secure a significant vote. In 2011, we had about 11,000 incidents of crowd management, as the police call it. Basically, those are 11,000 incidents of unrest, primarily over employment, primarily over service delivery. Even if COSATU reaffirms its commitment to the ANC, even if Jacob Zuma wins, even if the Communist Party continues to hold sway over COSATU, there's a fundamental fact about the state of politics in South Africa. That population is not rested. That population is rather restless. The second key factor is that, unlike other isolated incidents of a shooting here, an arrest there, or a parliament passing a bill despite the popular opinion, Marikana marks a key turning point. This is a fundamental point of crisis. This big, massive national union of mine workers, which has produced three secretary general of the ANC over the last 15 years, how can it lose hold of its membership? This speaks to another phenomenon which also explains COSATU's positioning. Because the National Union of Mine Workers, not only being the biggest union in South Africa, but also speaks to significant bureaucratization of the official trade union movement in South Africa through a co-option of leadership to co-manage industrial relations. After the Lonmin strike and the massacre, there were two outbreaks of other strikes at gold fields as well as other platinum mines, where workers on the ground are saying, we seek to challenge the agreements that the NUM has imposed on us, or we seek to challenge the leadership of the NUM as selling us out. In broad terms, like other COSATU unions, the Mine Workers Union has also been integrated into circuits of capital through the establishment of big mine workers' investment trusts, mine workers' investment companies. And I think what the Lonmin massacre, in terms of a new moment in our political history, represents is a challenge from workers from below to the bureaucratization of unions in South Africa. Initially, yes, mine workers got some returns because through the Mine Workers' Investment Trust, there were some bursaries that the children of mine workers were getting, and as such, then better life opportunities than their fathers were working in the mines. However, those bursary opportunities are quite limited because the economic structure remains unchanged. This turning moment in the history of worker struggles in South Africa is not going to be a straightforward linear path that says, here is a new trade union movement that's going to be born, or here is a new worker or community movement that's going to be born out of this. I think it's still going to grapple quite a while still with the overwhelming dominance of the ANC-led alliance and also the mine workers. But at the same time, key strategies followed by the worker trade unions under COSATU are also now becoming exposed. Within COSATU, a challenge to the mine workers is coming from another union called the Metal Workers, NUMSA, National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, which is much more radical, which in COSATU has basically held the banner for much more radical policy perspectives on mining. And basically, this contest between the metal workers and the mine workers as official unions speak to the extent to which COSATU is not really able to address different policy thrusts. Again, when it comes to the contestations over ANC presidency, the metal workers are pushing for a leadership change. The mine workers are pushing for a retention of Jacob Zuma. It's going to be an interesting contest to see how it develops. It's too early to talk of a split in COSATU, but if there was to be a split, it would basically grow over the contestation between the metal workers and the mine workers. What I've said up to now basically amounts to the following. The ANC has not succeeded to transform the South African economy, particularly its mining base. Instead, the ANC has allowed the restoration of profitability, not just to the mining sector, but to other key sectors in the South African economy. This was done on the basis of reproducing cheap labor post-apartheid, on the basis of a neoliberal program that integrated the South African economy in a globalizing capitalist economy in the early 90s. That's the fundamental point about South Africa today. Second, whilst the ANC maintained this capitalist thrust of South Africa, the ANC tried to have some kind of social delivery. But that social delivery was hemmed in by the capitalist structure which got reproduced, which increased inequalities and so on. As the ANC tried to manage a capitalist economy, whilst at the same time to undertake some social delivery, there was increasing popular discontent. This popular discontent would be met by political charm, and at times there were increasing cases of repression. But the picture on repression was not clear. However, in the last 4 to 6 years, there's been a much more precise, stronger imprint of repression, whether it's in the form of police repression or in the form of introducing laws that would increase the repressive power of the state. The Marikana massacre then marks a key departure from what was an unclear approach to repression and underlines very strongly an authoritarian aspect of ANC rule today. These features shape some of the debates about the leadership and political direction of the ANC. These features do not yet challenge the dominance of the ANC politically, partly because the ANC remains rooted in the Communist Party, which is quite popular, and in the trade union movement. However, both the Communist Party and the trade union movement have got a whole range of contradictions internally and politically in terms of their political perspectives about the country as a whole. Those contradictions have not reached a point where we can see a worker rebellion one way or the other, or a split in the trade union movement. What we are on the edge of, or on the eve of, is rather a key moment of what the left should think about in rebuilding a progressive working class movement in South Africa. The Marikana massacre has basically exposed the ANC as a party of capital and has exposed the limits of bureaucratized trade unionism. But there's no alternative yet in South Africa to these features. The ANC-dominated state or the worker movement led by COSATU, which is also dominated by the Communist Party. Now, the question facing those of us on the left outside the ANC and the SACP is, what do we do then, given the messy nature of the situation? It would be easy to say the turning point Marikana represents means that the path is clear to a new left alternative. The path is clear to a new mass worker movement. Unfortunately, we're not in that situation. We have to rebuild a whole range of things. Critical for me is an activist base. What South Africa has lost in 18 years of democracy is an independent, autonomous mass movement that is built on the foundation of massive layers of critically conscious activists. We don't have that. We've lost that. It has been disabled. It was demobilized and so on, integrated into the state, NGOized and all of that. We've lost it. So this moment, if those independent workers can hold out and they've inspired other strikes, if they've questioned the legitimacy of the ANC, how do we use that politically to hold a banner of hope? But then, not just a banner of hope, but a banner that also speaks to the rebuilding of people's power. What has happened also, partly through Mandela's own personal example, was to remove self-agency on the part of ordinary people. Now, those workers in Marikana have begun to reassert that. But how do we generalize that? It's possible. And what makes it possible even more is the fact that South Africa remains highly politicized. It remains quite angry. The danger with that, however, is that right-wing populism can misdirect this anger. And the left is rather too weak to rise up to that challenge in South Africa. The last question that is facing the left is that concerning the alliance between the unemployed and the employed. Part of the bureaucratization of the trade union movement has to do with the fact that the trade union movement has actually won significant gains for the ever smaller core of formerly employed workers. However, the bigger core of casualized, outsourced, informal workers, and the even bigger number of unemployed people seems to be outside of these benefits, because the limited benefits from the state of housing, of electricity, of water, ultimately get undermined by the lack of income, by unemployment, or by low incomes and so on. Now, the mainstream political parties, or even the trade union movement, have addressed this division between the informal group and then the unemployed. Is it possible to rebuild a worker community alliance, a phrase that we used in the 1980s in the struggle against apartheid? The mainstream liberal opposition in South Africa, the Democratic Alliance, which also has right-wing roots actually, is stepping into the breach. It led a march in April or May to the headquarters of COSATU. This breach between the employed and unemployed is being exploited by anti-progressive forces, by anti-working class forces, to basically increase and almost make permanent that schism between the formerly employed workers who are in unions, by and large, and then those who are outside unions. This is another challenge facing the left, and we have not risen up to that. So at this moment, if we were to be modest and disciplined about it as the new left in South Africa, we cannot celebrate the massacre of the workers as a vindication of our own old-tenure critics of the ANC, but rather it's a moment to really think hard in terms of developing strategies that can rebuild the confidence and the critical consciousness in an anti-capitalist direction in South Africa. Thank you.
And we've been listening to Mazebuko Jara, the editor of a new progressive magazine in South Africa, Amandla. And we're going to go out with a beautiful revolutionary song from South Africa. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.